Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Good morning, everyone. It is great to be here with you today. I've had a fantastic time in this town with many of your members. Great food, fantastic conversation, and a lot of community building. I am so thankful for all of the assistance that was given to bring me here today to join in your service and to share in your research and your search for your new minister. Today I'm going to share a bit about my story, and I think each person shares in life so many things that are similar. And as I share parts of my story today, I would like for you to kind of walk down the path of the journey you have taken. Perhaps you're familiar with some of the things that I may share. I am only one, but still, I am one. I cannot do everything, but still, I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. Now, these are the words of Reverend Edward Everett Hale, a Unitarian clergyman. He said these words, and I'm learning to embrace them, and I use them as a mantra for the way I intend to live my life. These words are written in your gray hymn book, and I consider these words to be important for the way that I live my life beyond categorical thinking. You might say, what in the world is categorical thinking? We were all born with the ability to make distinctions and to make choices as a result of choosing different things that we observe, different experiences that we face. And that's a good thing. Sometimes when we make distinctions, we can place, if we do it for people, place them in a box that doesn't allow them to be their whole selves. And some of those kinds of things that we use to lock people in a box could be race, ethnicity, disability, sexual orientation, gender, height, size, social class, you name it. We can lock ourselves in boxes, but we can also lock others in boxes. And that categorical thinking, those things that we gathered from people who we value, our parents, our friends, our teachers, our ministers, people we adore. We choose some things from books, our favorite authors. We choose some things from television, our favorite shows. We choose some things from media, newspaper, TV, internet, and we form opinions. And sometimes opinions lock people in spaces that deny them their full rights of life. As I stand before you, perhaps some of these things you can see, and some of them you may identify with. All right, I will start. I am African American. Do you see that? I am female. Yes. I was born in a rural southern town. I consider myself to be an adherent of Unitarian Universalist principles and a practitioner of the Soka Gakkai International's Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism. I had two parents who were married to each other for 50 years and 1 month. I have several siblings. I had a husband for 28 and a half years, and before his death, we had two children. And I am the grandmother of two grandsons. I started my education in a two-room schoolhouse. Did any of you do that? I was a stay-at-home parent during my children's early development. I now work with computers at a telecommunications company. I am a snorer. I am right-handed. I have earned 2 college degrees. I am number 5 of 7 of my parents' children. I am multifaceted. I am ever-changing. I am a server, a seeker of wholeness. I am a volunteer, beyond categorical thinking, facilitator. And I will tell you, at an early age, I think I chose to make a difference for good in the world. I was about 8 years old when the signs above doors made an impression on my being. The signs plastered on doors and walls read, "Colored only, whites only." The images remained seared in my memory. They were on the doors at the doctor's offices, at the county courthouse, at restaurants. They were above water fountains in public places. They were on the restroom doors at service stations, laundromats, bus stations. Just about any place you can name, there was a separation. There was to be no commingling between the races. You could enter the same building, but you were required to do so through different doors. One door directly in front of the establishment bore the sign that read "whites only." There was a side door or a back door for signs that read "colored only." I began to be aware of our schools being separate like that as well. But we were in different buildings on different sides of town. Provisions for 2 of everything must have had great impact and placed a great strain on meager economic budgets. 2 sets of schools for educating all grades of 2 races, 2 sets of buses transported 2 different races of children to separate schools for their education. 2 doors were required for the 2 races of people to enter where the same common needs were to be met by a single group of service providers. 2 sets of restrooms, 2 sets of water fountains, sitting side by side most of the time, but designated by those words, colored only, whites only. My parents, as you can imagine, probably as your parents would have, kept you from entering some of those forays to keep you safe. Well, we lived separate as well. We lived on Grandpapa and Grandmama's land alongside other family members and other folks whose families owned the land on which they lived. We were all of African descent and mixed with Indian and white genes as well. I tell you this story because these conditions caused a yearning inside of me to help make a difference in our town. News stories began to have an impact on me during this awakening as well. You see, the civil rights movements with dogs and fire hoses and people running and people marching and demonstrating touched me deeply. And I thought this separation and this meanness was a big misunderstanding. According to my thinking, a simple solution was the answer. At 8 years old, everyone needed me to help make a difference here. Didn't you think that at 8 years old, that you could change the world? My Baptist religious education had shown me a way, I thought, to handle the problem. I wondered why Jesus, oops, had shown them the way, had shown me the way, and not them the way. Like, love one another, regardless of differences. Nobody ever asked me to solve this problem, and the urgency for the resolution eventually subsided. But it did not go away. As I matured to high school age, there was an opportunity for me to make a contribution for the good of togetherness. The law of the land mandates for integration came to my town in the late 60s. Each student received a form from school to take home to parents to fill in their consent for participating in school integration. I read that form. Guess what I did? I filled in my parents' name and I turned it in with their intent for me to integrate the school in my county. I never told my parents what I had done. Knowledge of it came to light, however. One day, my elementary school teacher stopped by our house to congratulate my parents. She said, how brave you are to allow your child to attend the school next year. They thanked her as if they knew what she was talking about. When the teacher left, they asked me, what was this all about? I sheepishly told them, well, now that the decision was made, my parents allowed their unapproved consent to remain as I had decided. The teacher said it was something to be proud of. Therefore, how could they not follow through under these circumstances? I joined five other students and one teacher who integrated the school system in my town. Those signs eventually came down from the doors, the walls, the public buildings. But for a few years longer, the signs continued on private establishments. I remember the remaining images that those signs left behind. Imagine it. There was a clean, blank space. But it was shrouded by the residue of intolerance, indifference, inequalities, and ignorance. Segregation, oppression, and discrimination had deeply discolored all but a small space on the walls of buildings and in the hearts of many people. A clean space. A beautiful image. Think of it. A clean slate, if you will. The opportunity for something brand new to take place and fill that space, if only we could see. Years later, I imagine what new things could replace those negative writings on the walls. My mind was opened to the fact that something more humane could replace those negativities that hung in that space. When ripped clean of the ugliness that hate had built, the space was now ready for new seeds to be planted, for new fruits to take root and sprout and bear new things. The fruit of love, compassion, truth, justice, human kindness, respect. The seeds of hate planted in the soils of our hearts bear the fruits of our intent, actions, and behavior. Whatever is our intention, it never fails that we reap the harvest. It is important that each of us is acutely aware of what it is we want growing in our own garden, the garden of our hearts, in the depth of our lives, and spread it across the world. I intend to plant seeds of peace, acceptance for a healthy harvest of respect, compassion, peace and harmony to grow. And for me to share. In my small town, when the knock came on the door of integration, it gradually opened and a new way of human kindness took place for the human race. Some opened and allowed the new, while some chose to maintain the status quo. If the door for new opportunities has opened here, what will you choose to do for this new person to join this family? That's a question you can ask and answer for yourself. Just recently, after I shared this story, a gentleman looked seriously at me and asked, "Don't you just hate people who treated you like that?" I answered him, "No." He said, I would just hate them. I would be angry and I would just hate them. When I heard this passionate hate confession, I paused a second to rummage through the many reservoirs of my own hate-em boxes. We all have one, maybe two, or more. I did a quick inventory to see whether hate was sprawled broadly and comfortably in one of my hate box corners. Because the gentleman was driving, he could not hold me in a fixed stare for very long. But for as long as he could, he appeared to be looking in my face for hints of deception in the answer. I told him, as I tell you now, I felt no hate and I feel no hate. I work to remove the placards from the walls that hate built and nurtures. I work to see the opportunity for new messages to grow from the clean space left behind. It has the power to spread the desire for change, to change the residue, to cleanse the space. This is how I intend to live an authentic and honorable life beyond categorical thinking. The Flip This House reality TV show, have you ever seen that? Comes to mind as an example of how a rundown home can be stripped of its useless pieces and rebuilt into a stately manner. This is the way I want to build and live my life. I want to represent a steady contribution to the good. I want my actions to produce opportunities that stem the growth and root out discrimination, oppression, intolerance, lack of respect, and all sorts of other inhumane things. I want to stimulate the abundant growth of all the ingredients that produce the greatest representation of humankind: respect, love, justice, trust, joy. You might say these words I have shared outlines a tall order and never are to be fulfilled. A Chinese proverb says that if you want to correct the world, you must first correct the state. If you want to correct the state, you must first correct the family. If you want to correct the family, you must first correct yourself. Working at self-correction is of the first and perhaps only importance. By making one's own attitudes correct, great changes in others' attitudes are made possible. When you're called to see the signs and you make the decision to rip them down, that's when change can fill a clean space with something brand new, something that we carry in our hearts and in our lives. Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo.